Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Good. Very excited about this podcast today. MLS action has been fantastic so far. There's two more games coming up later tonight, which we will get to in what to watch for. By the time people are hearing this, maybe they have happened already, so we're not going to go too in-depth. But we will talk about the games that occurred last night in both the East and the West. There's obviously a lot of Champions League to get to. You have a mailbag, which you put together and then didn't show me any of the mail. So
left it in drafts and forgot to send it.
I will be operating completely on the fly. I have a red card man of the match, and I'm excited about both of them quite a bit.
Yeah, I think mine are very interesting too. I hope they don't overlap.
No,
because we never even checked in on this.
No, there's no, these will not overlap. I'd be really surprised.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you say? Should we get right into it? I kind of wanted to start actually because we're doing this podcast Thursday morning. So the MLS games from the previous night are still kind of both fresh in my mind. Is that okay with you? I know that this is supposed to be a Champions League react, but.
Yes, and we will get to the Champions League.
Yeah,
we
just
will
like
begin.
To run everything by you.
We'll begin.
You rule this podcast with an iron fist. You watch over me. You've tapped my phone lines.
I have. I'm definitely tapping your phone lines.
Let's start with the games last night. NYCFC playing at Citi Field, which I just felt terrible for them, for their fans. We had talked about this in the weeks leading up.
Yeah.
Playing against Toronto FC, and I guess ultimately, there's a lot that can be said about the game. Ultimately, I have one big takeaway. When you see NYCFC playing against Toronto FC in a playoff matchup, your mind can't help but go back to what happened in the 7-0 destruction from a few years ago.
Right.
I think if you're NYCFC, you leave a matchup like that thinking, well, like, that happened. We just got our A's kicked in and we probably deserved it. But you walk away from a matchup like what happened yesterday, and I think it's one that is hard to live with over the offseason because it just felt so self-inflicted.
Yes and no. I think if you look at the first 45 minutes, what Greg Vanney and that Toronto team put together was just brilliant, Andrew. Benazir, Pozuelo, Michael Bradley in the middle of the park. Perish the thought, Michael Bradley played well. The domination for 45 minutes was incredible. And right at the end, Alexi Lalas and JP De La Camera were just saying, get it to halftime. NYCFC, get it to halftime at 0-0. And they did. And they came out, they changed the formation, they went to a 4-4-2 with a diamond in the midfield. That's what Domi Torrent said at halftime that he would do. And they got back into the game. The self-inflicted part
are unfortunately the parts that matter.
Are the parts that matter.
The goals. The game is about goals, JJ.
Right. You're right. You're right. And the fact that Toronto didn't score in that brilliant 45-minute purple patch says a lot. But when you look at how horrendous that Pozuelo opener was, I can't. And then, to compound everything, it's a elder statesman, if you can be an elder statesman, of NYCFC, a guy who's been at the club for quite a while now, who gives up the penalty. It was just so self-inflicted in the way it went down. And also, the goal they scored was brilliant. It was such a good goal and a good finish on the half volley. And NYCFC did all that work to get back into the game, only for it to all fall apart.
It was, I mean, you felt for them because you feel like a narrative is beginning to develop about NYCFC that is not all that dissimilar from their hated rivals, the New York Red Bulls, which, you know, this great regular season team, even in this a year where that wasn't supposed to be the case. This was supposed to be a transition year for NYCFC, where their manager was on the hot seat after a month or so of the season. But they still found a way to work themselves into that number one seed, and it just ends so quickly.
But you
can't help but feel for them.
Yeah, and it's the nature of this beast, though. You know, there was NYCFC fans who were saying it was such a tough last night because I felt we've made so much ground since that hammering in 2016 that you referenced. Mm-hmm. And then I asked, yeah, you have, but when you think about it, Chanot, Callens, Matarita, the three culprits involved in the first and second goals, they were at the club in 2016. You know?
I know. You're right. These were not rookies making.
These are guys who have been here for a while.
Experienced, playoff tested players making mistakes that, like, the in terms of shock value for how your season can end, like committing a penalty like that, that is just so...
I mean, it was nonsensical.
So foolish.
So stupid. Covering defender. He's breaking into the box. You just let him go. You know what's going to happen. A tackle, a two-footed tackle from behind.
I mean, I understand. I don't want to say I understand what he's doing because you're right. It's exactly what you just said it was. But at that stage in the game, a feeling begins to creep over you as a player that, okay, I can't afford to make the next mistake because the next mistake could cost my team the season. And so Matarita sees he's going to be beaten around the edge there when, as it's getting towards the end line. And I think there's just this quick moment of like desperation that kind of washed over him of, I can't be beaten here. I cannot allow this player to make a centering feed here that sets up the winning goal.
Terrible.
I have to do something to make this situation
right. He's a professional
footballer. I know.
Come on. There's just no excuses for it. And I must give NYCFC their due. They did play much better in the second half. They did get control of the game, partly because Toronto ran out of steam from all the pressing and the hassling and the harrying that they did.
Well, Toronto was relentless in that way.
They certainly were.
And it seemed like it bothered NYCFC throughout the course of the night. It seemed like it could barely put anything together offensively in attack. I give Toronto, I don't want to just make this about NYCFC. I do give Toronto some real credit, in that I don't think we knew exactly what this season would be for them when Giovinco left. Josie Altidore, who didn't play last night, he for as good of a player as he is, and I still do believe he's one of the best strikers in this league, but he's just become difficult to rely on because of injuries, unfortunately. You know, Michael Bradley is advancing in age. Giovinco was really like the heart and soul, it feels like, of this team for the last few seasons. He's been at the center of their success.
I think
to lose a player of that quality, and here they are, they're right back in the conference finals.
Because they made the changes that needed to be made and brought in a player who... They made sure they wrestled him from Europe.
Pozuelo.
You know, and I mean, he left behind a bad reputation because of the way he exited, but they got Pozuelo in and he's quality.
He is. He had an up and down season.
He did have an up and down season, but he's a game changer. You know, it's not like Giovinco couldn't fade in and out of games occasionally. He was much more consistent and probably a better player.
Well, yeah, but that's harsh. Giovinco's going to go down as one of the best players in the history
of
the league.
Yeah, but whatever. Why are we talking about Giovinco here?
Well, I'm just saying I give them credit for losing a player that is that important to them.
Right.
And here they are right back in the conference.
But I think it's a style of play as well, Andrew. Like, they passed the ball, they moved it well, and they also did the really tough thing that seems to escape a lot of teams, including Manchester United until the weekend, which is they hassled, they pressed, they won their tackles.
Yeah.
And that's really, if you bring that intensity to a game, you're halfway there. The other side to it is as well, there was a lot of complaints about the pitch. NYCFC got to train on the pitch. Toronto didn't. They came in and they played and they won and they left. Greg Vanney did a great job last night.
Yeah, he really did. There was one other thing that Toronto did last night that I was wondering if you were thinking about in the moment. It was a heartbreaking moment for NYC, but I couldn't help but be mentally thinking of...
Panenka!
What a
Panenka!
Moment to bring that out.
Well, Sean Johnson earlier in the season had saved a penalty from Pozuelo. One he'd put in the corner, and Johnson, it wasn't a good penalty, but to his credit, Johnson got down and saved it. And Pozuelo came back again, and I mean...
It takes a special kind of confidence, bordering on cockiness, to choose that moment to do that.
Yeah, that's beyond...
I couldn't do it.
Oh, I'm going low and hard to the corners.
Yeah.
And closing my eyes after
like,
I hit the ball.
Like, what if Sean Johnson just stands there and catches that ball and then it goes to extra time and NYCFC go on and win the
game? By the way, it's perfectly paced as well. Because I think recently, and I can't remember where I saw it, somewhere in the depths of the internet, Andrew, I saw a Panenka that was too lofted.
Yeah, I saw it too.
Was it in the Irish League? I can't remember. But the goalkeeper dived and was able to get
back up
and save it.
Yeah.
So,
can you imagine?
Oh, the embarrassment. Especially in a big moment like that.
So Toronto do advance. We don't yet know, as we're recording this Thursday, it's about noon right now in New York. So we don't yet know who their opponent is. I couldn't help but watch last night thinking, oh my God, if the Philadelphia Union can somehow go into Atlanta and get away with a win, they will have the Eastern Conference Final at home, which would just be an unbelievable thing.
It would be unbelievable.
But I don't want to dream yet.
Well,
I dare to dream. And then in the Western Conference Final last night, JJ, it's the Seattle Sounders over Real Salt Lake, 2-0.
Much more comprehensive, I think.
Yes. This was exactly... I said before the postseason started that Seattle, even though they were the 2 seed, was kind of my dark horse just because I felt like they're such a playoff-tested team that is... like comfortable in their own skin with how they want to play under Brian Schmetzer. And that was it last night. Like, to think that Seattle at home would only have like, what, 35% possession, but like, this is who they are. They are comfortable to allow you to control the ball. They're very, they're just well set up defensively. They're comfortable in playing on the counterattack. And right now, I would say, I don't want to make grand statements off of just like small sample sizes, but I can't help but watch Jordan Morris right now and feel like we're watching a moment in his career where things are turning. I feel like he's been that good and that important for them.
I think he's recovered well from that knee injury. He's come back and he might be a better player. He's certainly a more efficient player. On the game though last night, when a team comes into your building and can only manage one shot on target for the game, Seattle absolutely expected to win that and come out and do exactly what they should have done.
It's funny though, because you say that, but when Fox spoke to Brian Schmetzer after the game, because the first half was poor on all fronts. I mean, Nico Ladero hit the crossbar from about 25 yards out, which would have been it was like a pass to the crossbar. It would have been a great goal. But that was really, like, it felt like that was it. And Seattle wasn't really into the game, and Salt Lake was probably comfortable with the way that game was going. And so Brian Schmetzer, he implied afterwards that he let his team have it in the locker room at halftime. Well, I'm trying to remember what the exact quote was, but I think Katie Witham asked him on the field what was said in the locker room at halftime that caused you guys to come out so differently in the second half. And he kind of smiled and said, "Boy, I hope somebody recorded what was said in there."
Oh,
like,
geez.
I took that to mean,
I think that would be X-rated.
and sure enough, they responded and Seattle came out and they were a different team. I think, you know, a lot of it is just like Ladero saw a lot more of the ball in the second half, and Seattle was very good in the counterattack. And, you know, so many of these games, we come away with the same sort of conclusions that, like, you know, set pieces just seem to matter more this time of year. Like, Seattle got a big one against Dallas in the previous round. They got a huge one last night to get the opening goal. And, you know, those things are just huge in these games that are decided by such slim margins.
When you see how the best teams in the world operate in terms of being efficient and good on set pieces, it makes absolute sense that in a one-off game where you have to win, you've got to be on top of it both defensively and offensively. It makes such a big difference.
Also, I don't know if you happened to see last night, if you were still watching at this point, after it went to 2-0, JJ, the red card from Everton of Real Salt Lake.
Yeah.
It was
bad.
That was hideous.
There was a lot of talk about, I think Rob Stone tweeted, "I'd be happy to never see him play in MLS again," or something to that effect.
Well,
I wouldn't go that far, but it was hideous.
It looked like a guy
born out of frustration.
Frustrated, our season is ending. You know, Seattle has been physical with us. They've stymied us. They haven't really allowed us to play the way we want to play, and I'm just mad. And I'm going to act out.
No more than Matarita. You just can't do it.
No. It was really ugly. And thankfully, the official was right there. He was all over it. So Seattle does advance. Before we move off of this, I do want to say that one of the great MLS careers did come to an end last night. And one of, I think you'd have to say, the classiest players that this league has seen. A guy who kind of, I don't want to say succeeded against all odds, but Nick Raimondo as a goalkeeper did not exactly fit the prototype of what your classic goalkeeper looks
like.
He's undersized. And yet he went on and will go down as one of the, if not the greatest goalkeepers this league has ever seen. And watching first of all, it was a memorable performance. Even though he gave up two goals, I don't think you looked at either of them and said, really, hey, that's on you. He had a very good game last night. He made some really key saves to keep Real Salt Lake in it. His post-game comments were really emotional. He was choked up. He had a hard time conducting the interview, which, you know, a guy's been around the sport for 20 years. You can imagine what was going through his head. And it was sad to see his career come to an end, a player that I think a lot of American fans and certainly Salt Lake fans really, really took to.
He made a save as well that kind of, he'll be very happy with. He tipped a header over, which was a really good save. And you talk about him being not the prototypical look for a goalkeeper. To show his agility right at the end to get that, because that was dipping under the crossbar, to push it up over was kind of fitting. I know they lost 2-0. I know he conceded two goals, but still.
Yeah. So onwards, Seattle Sounders into the conference finals. We await their foe. I hope that, I mean, you really bullied me today. You said, no, the podcast has to be on Thursday. I hope that we don't live to regret that we are not going to be able to have reaction to tonight's games because I'm so
I know, but you know how we know the metrics for Friday podcasts. They're not as good.
It's a good point.
So we went with Thursday. You know,
metrics.
We are statistics, metrics, analytics bound organization.
Yeah. So on that note, we will do a tiny bit more on MLS postseason and what to watch for. But I suppose now, JJ, we should switch over from the MLS teams to the best teams and the Champions League. Not a super eventful slate this week. I only have a few games here that I've really jotted down.
No, and the powerhouses in each group are beginning to just exert their influence.
Well, sort of.
Sort of.
We'll start with Manchester City as they really, you talk about a team exerting themselves. They do so over Atalanta. It was not easy at the start. They did go down and they did concede another penalty, which was saved. But in the end, it's 5-1 for Manchester City. I just like can't help but watch Raheem Sterling right now and truly feel like I'm watching one of the greatest players in the world.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think week in and week out, we're seeing the improvement that's come since Pep Guardiola has taken over. And he's just someone who thrives in his system, who's been... I mean, he's so much more efficient, I feel, than he ever was when, and I watched him enough when he was at Liverpool. He's a better finisher.
Well, that's it. Like the things that people were saying about him, you know, oh, Raheem Sterling, he's this, he's that.
People were saying like, about it last summer.
Right.
You know?
But, you know, until he learns how to finish, he's just going to be sort of whatever. Well, he's learned how to finish.
For sure. And, when he's in positions that before were, maybe 50-50, you're now certain he's going to score. And he is a key component of what City do.
Well, the crazy thing is, because you feel like he's been around for so long, what, he's 24, right?
Yeah. I mean, he is but a boy.
Seriously?
But you got to remember, when he burst onto the scene, I suppose he was in QPR's academy and then he ended up at Liverpool. You know, it happened really, really quickly. He made his debut for Liverpool at, what, 17?
Yeah.
Under Kenny Dalglish, towards the end of that season under Dalglish. So he's been around a long time. We've been talking about him a long time. Don't forget he was in a title race when he was still in his teens with Liverpool against Manchester City in 13-14. And that's why we think he should be older than he is, but that's just the perception of when someone who bursts in at a young age.
Yeah. I don't know if it's putting a damper on it, but Manchester City losing Rodri to injury in this one.
It's definitely putting a damper on it. I mean, it's good that John Stones is back, for sure. But yeah, Zinchenko with a knock too. They've got significant injury problems. There's no point dancing around it. And the last thing they needed, now Pep Guardiola said it's a hamstring, but he doesn't have a time frame on when he'll be back.
Hamstrings are hard to do that with.
Yeah.
You would think what, 4 weeks?
Well, you don't know if what grade tear it is. It's not good. It really isn't. And you saw particularly on the penalty, Fernandinho. Look, I actually think it was the weirdest penalty ever given up for Atalanta because Ilicic is moving towards Fernandinho, but his touch on the ball actually puts it in the opposite direction.
Away from the box.
Away from the box. Yeah. And Fernandinho kind of just has a knee-jerk reaction, which fells him. But it just goes to show you, you don't really want Fernandinho defending one-on-one in those situations. And it goes to show you how City need actual defenders in there. You know, out and out defenders.
Yeah. But like, but we talk about him as being somebody that they can slot in at central defense.
I know, but I think I feel less and less confident about that as the weeks go by.
So, hello, Stones Otamendi?
I mean, I guess so.
They just have to keep playing bink bunk football and just control as much possession as
possible. We have said on this podcast,
the best defense can be a great offense.
That has been their way of defending for a long time, is that you don't have the ball, so you're not going to do anything anyway.
Yeah. JJ, Tottenham due to Red Star Belgrade what they desperately needed to do. I am not going to sit here today and tell you that everything is well once again at White Hart Lane.
But it's nice to win.
But imagine what we would be saying if that didn't happen. So, like, that's really the only thing I can say about it is, like, the alternative to that would have been so, like, gravely disappointing that it, like, what's the cliche? Like, even a marathon begins with a single step.
Yeah.
Like, you have to start winning at some point.
You do. One of your questions on the rundown was, a bit weird. Do you think we're starting to get a sense of what Tottenham's preferred 11 is?
Why is that weird?
Well, it's just, you look at the team last night and you see Ndombele and Sissoko together, and you see Vertonghen and Davinson Sanchez together at centre back, and you see Eric Lamela in the side.
Right.
I still don't know if that's going to be a preferred 11.
Right, so that's a great question. That's what I'm saying. So I still don't, I'm asked, that was a genuine question where I want to know, like, do we have any idea what, like, for most of Pochettino's time, you pretty much knew going out there what his 11 were going to be. And right now, I don't know. I don't know what, like,
yeah,
what, who my choice 11 are.
I certainly don't.
I mean, Pochettino's talked about playing Sissoko at fullback, you know, like.
Well, there was a need for it for a while there.
Right, but
and
like,
still
Ben
maybe.
Davies is playing in Champions League games, and I still think Serge Aurier is just like a train wreck waiting to happen, but he's playing right back. Like, I don't know, it's...
This may be one of those, and I hate to say it, and I don't mean to make you sad, but this may be one of those blips that a team in decline has, where it gives you the hope that they're on the way back, but they're not really.
I'm not even implying that that is what happened yesterday.
And Red Star are not, I mean, they're not a team that you can judge any sort of comeback on.
And I'm not trying to do that. But you're saying all these things with a smug smile.
I'm not. I don't mean to
come across the desk and smack you.
Yeah, well, don't.
Look, if Tottenham are going to advance out of the group, which is still very much within reason, like this was obviously a game where this had to happen, and they overturned the Bayern Munich goal differential, right? That was a 7-2 beating. Well, they just won this one 5-0. So.
Oh, meaning that the Bayern Munich game was a draw.
No, but I'm saying their goal difference is back to even.
Yeah, okay.
Look, the road back to respectability is going to be
starts,
a long
starts
and curvy
with meaningless
one.
Stuff.
How's this meaningless? It's a Champions League game.
All right, okay.
By the way, Harry Kane has scored 16 goals in the group stage of the Champions League. Only one English player has scored more. Do you know who? You will not get this.
In the group stage?
Harry Kane has 16 goals in the group stages of the Champions League. Only this player has more among English players. I actually can't believe this, and I almost...
Go on.
Paul Scholes has 19.
Oh, interesting.
I never would have thought that.
There was a lot of, you know, he had longevity. Champions League every year.
But wouldn't you have thought maybe like Rooney or...
No, yeah, maybe. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, how about that? Let's see. We continue now, JJ, with Chelsea. They go into Ajax, come away with a win, thanks to a certain boy.
Yes, a certain
sort
man.
Of.
Well,
yeah.
I don't think...
We've retired Boy Wonder Watch. We
really haven't hit...
Months.
Yeah, because every time he's interviewed and asked about being Wonder Boy,
yeah, I know.
No one ever says what we say.
But also, I feel like people now use that in like... As like we were part of the problem. Oh... All these people calling Christian Pulisic Boy Wonder, like they built him up. It's not fair.
Well, we just wanted to use a nice jingle. That was it.
We were part of the problem.
He was excellent. He came on. He turned that game on its head. Well, I say that. Chelsea were good during the game. They had chances. Equally did Ajax had the same. It was a close game. I'll tell you, in terms of quality, it was just brilliant to watch. The ball was moved. At times, it was almost too fast, the speed of the game. But Pulisic comes on and he runs at people. I mean, one of his big contributions prior to setting up the goal for Batshuayi was a run that I always talk about where he's wide on the left and he's moving in, takes a 1-2, I think, off Batshuayi and just drags his shot, to the right of the keeper. But he had just such a big impact. And equally, I'm not surprised.
Yeah,
I'm just not surprised.
I agree.
And I want to say something that people have been talking, you know, oh, finally, you know, he's coming to the fore. I actually don't think he's been bad for Chelsea. I think there's one game I can pick, which was his last start in the league. And I keep going on about it against Sheffield United, where I thought that wasn't good. Mm-hmm. That wasn't good. The Grimsby game wasn't good because no one had passed him the ball. That was part of the problem. But other than that, against Norwich, I thought he was good.
Well, Norwich was the weird game where no one would give him the ball, right?
No, Norwich was away. Grimsby was the game.
Oh, that's right.
Was the game in the cup where they wouldn't give him the ball. But away at Norwich, I thought he was excellent. You know, it was interesting to hear Martin Tyler on commentary talk about him, because Martin Tyler was going, "It looks as if," and this was after just two or three touches, you know, involved in the game. it looks as if Pulisic is getting acclimatizing to the occasion. And I stopped and I thought, Martin, he's played at the Westfalen Stadium against Real Madrid. He's played in Champions League games before. I actually don't think this is daunting him. Does he really want to make an impression? Yes. Is this the biggest stage he's played on? No, it's equal. He's done it That's before, you know? And then I thought, a lot of the narrative about Pulisic is being, you know, that he's struggling at Chelsea, the price tag, maybe it's not going to work out. It's been fueled by people who haven't been watching him closely the last few years. That's a fact. And I'm not saying Martin Tyler doesn't do his research, but he wasn't 100% sure whether Sergiño Dest could still declare for Haaland. I was screaming. I was like, he's played non-competitive games. You should know this. It should be in your notes. And I'm just saying that he may have been at Dortmund and front and centre in the American fans' eyes, doesn't mean he's been front and centre in the eyes of the English media, who have shown
a quite
impressive lack of knowledge about where he's been prior to moving to Chelsea.
There's a podcast. It's funny you say this because you're right. We like the regard in which we here in the United States hold him is so clearly and obviously unique to the rest of the world, to the point I was listening to a podcast. I won't say which one, but after Chelsea signed him, they were talking about, they were almost like mocking it. Like, Chelsea's gone out and spent that money on who? And like, one of them mentioned this American kid, and another guy said, wait, he's American? I thought he was Croatian.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't even know, like, they did not, straight up, they did not know who he was. And I was listening to it, I was like, wait, this is possible that people, like, in the world of covering this sport don't even know anything about him?
Yeah.
Like, it's weird.
Hugely underestimated the Anglophile, narrow tunnel vision version of the English media that looks at football. Seriously, we have. But this is a Sally Field moment, and I demand the drop.
You like me?
I know. Imagine if he actually comes good.
Look, I think he's doing just fine. He is settling in nicely. Lampard has now seen a performance against the Champions League semi-finalists last season, a performance of note. Backed up by a performance of note against Newcastle. The evidence is there. He's a quality player, and he suits the way Chelsea play. And that is that.
We should say, by the way, aside from the Pulisic angle of this game, this was, as far as 1-0s go, this was a pretty fun game.
It was entertaining.
Yeah.
It had incidents. You know, any team away from home, so Chelsea fans don't jump on my back, any team away from home rides their luck. Promise school.
Yeah.
How that was ruled out.
Because he was offside.
Okay. Part of his shoulder was offside. But it was a tight call. But it just goes to show the kind of attack Ajax were able to have. I mean, Batshuayi
put one over the bar that was...
Oh, was egregious, yeah.
Right. And you know, Hudson-Odoi had one that he kind of scuffed wide.
Right,
on a really
so Chelsea,
good
it was, I won't say end-to-end, but it kind of was. There was chances for both teams. Very entertaining game. And that is a huge win. Forget Pulisic for a second. Look at the overall state of play under Lampard right now. You love saying statement win. But that kind of in the context...
I don't ever remember even saying the words
When I look at our rundown, you've always scribbled in, is this a statement win? Could this be a statement of some sort, Senator?
That's what you hear when I talk.
No, it's not, but I like mocking you. But in terms of the group, in terms of the fledgling career of Lampard's children, this is a statement result.
I'm kind of wondering, JJ, if we're due for a in the club with Chelsea. I feel like they've been very interesting this season.
Not that long ago since we did one with the boys from London as Blue. I mean, is there anyone else more deserving? Like, we talk a lot of Chelsea now, the fact that our boy is
there. I just find them fascinating because what they're doing in terms of how the club is structured is just, so 180 from what we knew them to be.
Because they were forced into it. Like, they had no choice. No choice.
That's not necessarily true.
It is necessarily true.
I mean, guys like, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Olivier Giroud could have been playing over Tammy Abraham, but they've chosen to
That is an interesting point. That's a different point. I actually thought that for, I think the opening couple of games of this season, including the Super Cup, I thought they should play Giroud. He's like a wall. You can hit the ball off him and he can link the play.
Right, but I'm saying, but they've been, there are veteran players. Like, you make it sound like there's not a single veteran player. They only have 18
players. They have been playing the veterans.
I mean, so Willian has recently come back in.
Willian's played a lot, and I think now, in a restructured, I think Lampard was giving food for thought now. Pulisic may come in, and Willian may drop to the bench. Be interesting to see what happens there, actually.
Any other games that really stood out to you? I did want to mention, for your sake, that was, if you're Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, I imagine what went on yesterday meant a lot to you.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely did. The finishes were good. The first one driven low past the goalkeeper, and the second one to have the confidence to stab one home from the edge of the box with the outside of your boot in off the underside of the crossbar. Very, very good. It also played into our conversation about Liverpool's depth, you know?
Yeah.
Making sure you have guys that can come in and make an impact. It's not a perfect, testing ground for that theory, but it was important that Liverpool could bring in Keita, revamp the midfield somewhat. I feel like Fabinho needs a break at some point. I wonder when that's going to come. Very good night. Jesse Marsh.
Tough one.
He's got them attacking. He has not quite got them defending, but that is Napoli. But I think the thing that came out of it for me was the continuing rise of Erling Braut Haaland. First ever player to score 6 goals in his first 3 Champions League appearances. There was a debate, I can't remember where it was, the other day about how the centre forward has changed. Instead of having one out and out striker, you'll have 3 nippy speedsters like Liverpool have, or even like, look what Tottenham have. They have a centre forward in Kane, but they've got, you know, 2 players buzzing around him. I'm not saying Salzburg don't have that, but Haaland is a throwback. A extremely skillful throwback, but a throwback nonetheless. He reminds me a bit of, and maybe I'm just making Norwegian comparisons now, but when John Carew came through at Rosenborg, he was like this hugely physical. Have you seen Haaland move?
Yeah.
He's a giant, but he's got a great first touch. He's a very good finisher. And he's an aerial threat. And I'm thinking, that's kind of a dying breed type of centre forward. He's a throwback man.
Hell of a player.
Yeah. What else was there?
I did want to just mention Barcelona and Real Madrid. I guess kind of, you know, workman-like performances on the road in the Champions League.
Messi scoring in 15 consecutive Champions League seasons now. I suppose that's a note to come out of the game, which is amazing.
Messi, like, records almost don't even really faze me anymore.
Yeah, that one wasn't underwhelming because... Was it underwhelming? It was not underwhelming in sense of his longevity. That's amazing.
It's a double negative. I'm having a hard time sorting through that.
It's very cool that he has 15 seasons in a row in the Champions League, no injuries, nothing in which he can score in. But like you say, when you hear a Messi stat, you're like, oh, that's cool.
Well,
and you're on to the next one.
Because
the next game week, something else is going to come up. That, with Messi and Ronaldo, that's how I feel.
Yeah. For Real Madrid against Galatasaray, potentially a difficult place to go. Narrow 1-0 victory. They score in the first half. Toni Kroos. But I guess if you're Zidane, it just feels like a temporary reprieve in some ways. Just like, okay, it's a win.
It's a win, but swirling around him is that Jose Mourinho has spoken to Florentino Perez. There's other managers being groomed. There's even Graham Hunter, who is not spreading rumors, by the way. He wrote an article for ESPN FC about how there is a way to manage this by moving Zidane upstairs and putting in Xabi Alonso or somebody else in as a manager. He wrote a good, kind of interesting, thoughtful piece on that. But that is all swirling around Zidane. He does not feel secure. He shouldn't feel secure. And this is a kind of reprieve, like you said.
Yeah.
One other thing, because it was kind of a disturbing footnote to the Liverpool game, was Liverpool fans bringing in a very offensive banner into the stadium last night in Belgium relating to Divock Origi. The club made a statement. The banner is highly offensive and inappropriate. We condemn its use at the game tonight and sought to have it removed as soon as we became aware. We will look to identify those responsible for bringing it into the stadium and act accordingly. And it's just embarrassing what it was. I don't want to go into what the banner actually was, but... You know, there's no defending it. And if you're a Liverpool fan, you shouldn't try to. It was racist, even if its intent was not to be racist, even if its intent was some low, primordial banter. It was just not funny, not appropriate. And you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah. Let's see. That's about it, JJ, for the Champions League. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we've got a mailbag. We've got what to watch for. We've got red cards, man of the match. Don't go anywhere. And back now on Caught Offside. JJ, there was one other thing. Actually, we left the Champions League before I mentioned this one thing here. So Barcelona did win. Like we said, it was not really a convincing performance. And Marc-Andre Ter Stegen has noticed that. And he said he would like to call for a team meeting to discuss what he deemed to be a bad performance in that 2-1 win over Slavia Prague.
Okay. Team
Barcelona,
meeting.
Yeah. I feel like Barcelona.
Couldn't that be, does he have to tell people? Could he not just call a team meeting? Does it have to be announced? He's very mouthy lately.
Yeah. That's kind of why I brought it up. I feel like he's really coming into his own.
Speaking his mind.
Yeah.
Speaking his truth.
He said it's normal to be angry, Ter Stegen said after the match. We didn't play at the level we wanted to. At least we've got the 3 points, which is the most important thing. We need to speak about things. We have to do that among ourselves. I'm not going to say about what here. It's internal. There's a lot to improve. I would like to speak first with the players that have been on the pitch. You know, Barcelona, they have moved back into the top of the table in La Liga, and I'm sure they'll advance out of the group in the Champions League. But, you know, we have said in this Champions League season that it does feel unusually open in some ways. And when people are talking about their favorites, you know, like Manchester City and Liverpool oftentimes are the first two names that come out of people's mouths in an era where it's always kind of been Barcelona or maybe Real Madrid. And, you know, Barcelona is probably not totally unaware of that feeling. And so they want to kind of nip this in the bud.
No, I hear you. I understand that.
Let's see. You have a mailbag?
@CEOSoccerPod on Twitter, CaughtOffsidePod. @gmail.com and email @CaughtOffsideESPN on Instagram. Follow us everywhere. Just go and do it. All right? Stop, don't make me beg. We're good at podcasts. We're bad at social media. Help us out.
Do you think that?
One guy goes, I listen to you all the time. This is the message we got. Yeah. I can't believe you have less than 2,000 followers on Instagram. I'm like, well, we've only really just started using Instagram. But apart from that,
how often do we use it? I
go on it lots. I make up stories. I post pod stuff up there. I interact with people. You don't just like the general public, so it's
never
going to happen.
Well, I asked you, I tried to go on to it. I asked you what the password was and you didn't know.
Yeah.
I couldn't get on.
I'm saving you from yourself. This is an intervention. You don't need
to. So you know what it is, you just won't tell me.
Yeah. No, you're not going on there. I'm being the parent in this and I'm going to put a monitor on it. It would hurt your feelings.
Oh.
It wouldn't actually. People are really nice and friendly.
But the number
we care about is the amount of people that listen to us, not our followers. By the same token, follow us. D. Templeton. Hey guys, I've been listening to the pod since the 2018 World Cup previews. Haven't missed an episode since. Quick mailbag question for you that crosses over into the Manchester music scene of the 80s. If Morrissey was any Premier League player in history, who would you liken him to? And he goes on to liken him to Mario Balotelli because Morrissey is incredibly talented, but his personal behavior was kind of controversial.
I would probably say Jack Grealish, Irish blood, English heart, this I'm made of.
Oh, wow. Unprepared, you came with the absolute fire. Yeah, great tune.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's a very good one. Who's somebody that's maudlin and never seems that happy? Because Morrissey's never happy. A player, who's a Premier League player, guys, who just has a moody face on all the time? Is there one? I mean, Van Dijk.
No.
When he smiles.
He doesn't smile
on the field, though. He does. I don't know.
I feel like there's one right there that I'm just not thinking of.
Yeah. Who am I missing?
All right,
Heaven knows I'm miserable now. Joe Perticone. I was at the US v Cuba game at Audi Field in DC. The stadium was half empty and it was like that for the friendly against Jamaica earlier in this year. I go to about a dozen DC United games a year and it's never even close to being that empty, even when it's pouring rain. So why do you think the USMNT struggles with fan attendance so often on US soil and what can be done to change that? My favorite pod, I never miss a show, Joe. Thanks,
very nice.
Joe.
So I would attribute it to us being in a unique moment where three things are combining all at once. One of those being, I guess, a thing that it oftentimes is the case, but I'll just throw it out there again, ticket prices. I think these games, considering like the competition, the opponent.
Now, that wasn't the case for the Cuba game. I think they were reasonably priced, but usually they are very expensive.
And then I would also say, look, part of it is that, let's be honest about U.S. soccer right now. Like, this is not wholly different from any other team that you root for. JJ, when the Mets are bad and you look in Citi Field, what do you see? A lot of empty seats. Right now, let's talk about U.S. soccer. They're not that good right now.
No.
So American fans are not really that enthused to go watch this product as opposed to if this team was flying.
I think as well, and you can tell me I'm wrong, tell me I'm a fool, but if you look at the 2014 World Cup, which was my first tournament that I experienced in this country, the amount of casual fans who came out of the woodwork, like you expect to support their team, was interesting to me. It reminded me of that spring when the Winter Olympics were on and everyone was supporting the hockey team and bars were full at 8 o'clock in the morning. We are event junkies in this country.
Yeah.
And when a game is important and our national team are involved, we show up. Even fans who aren't big soccer fans. And I'm wondering, when you've got an endless plethora of meaningless friendlies, are a lot of people just going, I'll watch it on TV?
You are right. I didn't even think about that in the sense of, you know, maybe we're starting to see some of the after effects of the U.S. not having qualified for the 2018
right.
World Cup, where like a lot of those casual fans, so a World Cup 2014 happens and casual fan interest is at a peak. And then over the next 3 years, it kind of wanes. And then the 2018 World Cup happens and boom, it comes back to the peak and then wanes. We never had that peak in 2018.
No.
So the waning of the casual fan interest has continued to go down until it's just totally out of sight, out of mind.
I think that's a factor, guys.
Yeah. And then the other factor that I was going to say is, like, American soccer fans also don't yet know what to even make of this competition, this CONCACAF Nations League.
Neither do Canadian fans.
Right. Is it a thing to be excited about? Is it not? Cuba is not exactly a team that is going to bring a lot of people to stadiums to watch the U.S. play.
I will say this, though. After what happened in Toronto on November 15th in Orlando, in a reasonable soccer-specific size stadium, that place should be full. That place
for the Canadian national
team. Yes, for the second game, for the return leg. I really do think it should. I hope it is. One other thing as well, we don't have a centralized ground either. We play all over the place, and when you move around geographically like that, you're going to bump into problems with people traveling to see the team and also some fan bases in cities that aren't as energized or as big. Mm-hmm. Castillo. So he sent us a meme of LeBron James and some other high profile sports people who have come from poverty or from difficult circumstances to rise to the very top in American sports. So from living in the ghetto to an NBA legend. That's the one for LeBron, and there's other ones there. And he prefaces this with, from your podcast last week, this is what the Earthquakes coach Mateus Almeida was talking about. The passion that makes Tevez, Ronaldo, and countless others to make it. Getting out of the struggle is a real motivator. Our national team is made up of manicured lawns and three-car garages. Okay. So the first thing about that is equating passion with motivation. Like, you can be passionate about something, really enjoy it, and you can be motivated to do well in it, even if you're middle class or above that. Like, if you look at some of the US women, like, I'm trying to think, I'm sure some of them have come from lower middle class or maybe even working class families, but a lot of them haven't, and they're the best at what they do. Now, there's the opportunity that social capital brings in terms of being able to afford soccer and being able to play up through the ranks. But is passion equatable with economic status?
I don't know about passion. I do wonder if desperation is like that. Look, I'll be forthright. I came from a middle class background, so I don't know that I am qualified to be able to say if I can relate to what that feeling is.
We're both upper middle class.
If you come from a lower class demographic Is there some sort of desperation that I can't relate to that you feel to get out of your current situation? So,
I mean, a lot of players, Maradona, Pele included, came from poverty, rose from poverty. But we've had that in the past with Clint Dempsey and Landon Donovan, single parent family in Landon Donovan's case, and Clint Dempsey, who talks about growing up in rural Texas with not a lot of money. In fact,
his sister had to stop playing her sport.
Sister passed away tragically, and it meant that there wasn't enough money for him to join an elite travel team. So maybe I don't know. And I don't know all the demographics of the current U.S. men's national team, but it is an interesting point. KK, is Chris Wilder in the top 10, if not the top 5 managers in the league? Sheffield United look really solid and actually try and play some neat football without having the resources that many of the teams around them have. They won, of course, on Monday night at home at Bramall Lane to the Arsenal.
Yeah, they've won 3 times this season. They're in the top half of the table. Is it like a little bit quick and presumptuous maybe to say that he's, what did he say, a top 5 manager?
Top 5 or top 10.
I don't think I'm ready to say that here today. Who,
like, the work he's done.
If you had to give your top 5 currently in the league, I think you start with some sort of combination of Pep, Klopp, Pochettino. I do still include Pochettino in there.
Right. After that,
where do you go from there?
After that, it's a lot of short-term, newly instated guys. I mean, if you want to add in what Wilder did in the championship and the brand of football he played and the commitment to passing the ball, the commitment to having your centre backs bomb forward, all those things. By the way, not spending much money. I mean, how many foreigners have they in the team? It's a team made up of British and Irish lads.
I mean, for Bournemouth to be able to sustain some measure of success, I think Eddie Howe would get a shout. You know, Sean Dyche, Burnley doesn't really ever do much in transfer windows, and yet, you know, they continue to be a fairly
successful
club. Those
guys are just naturally ahead of Chris Wilder based on the fact that they've kept teams in the Premier League for a sustained period.
Yeah, you're right. To pass guys like Dyche and Howe, Wilder will have to do it a couple more years.
Yeah, I would think so. How does Andrew feel about Roy Keane's comments on Sunday about signing Harry Kane? We've actually got the audio here.
Just go and get Kane from Spurs, easy.
You'll be popular with Spurs fans.
Just go and get him.
Serious?
Yeah, what you're all staring at. Yeah.
But that's what Man United, that's what Man United should be batting. Roy, that's what Man United should be batting.
Go
for the best, always have done.
They're in disarray, go and get him.
So he's basically saying, Andrew, he'll score you 30 goals. He'll score goals blindfolded. Just get him. United's problems are solved up front.
That feels a little simplistic.
It really does.
I believe, and I have always believed, that Harry Kane is better than Romelu Lukaku, but I imagine similar things could have been said when United signed Lukaku. Oh, well, they've got a proven striker now who's going to get you 20, 25 goals. All your problems are solved. Were they? He's now been sent off elsewhere because it didn't work there.
And why
and
would
his
he,
time there, I don't think any United fan looked back on fondly.
Why would he leave a team that is in some level of crisis to join a team that's in a complete rebuild at 26 years of age?
A team in an equal level of crisis.
And a team that is also probably going to lose its one creative midfielder in Paul Pogba. I can't see him being there next season. Yeah. I just can't visualize.
I don't know. That's a little disappointing from Roy Keane. That feels like he's a pretty intelligent football mind, I feel like, and that feels like a really simplistic comment. Yeah, look, I would say this. Manchester United, all things being equal, would love to have Harry Kane. He's not breaking new ground in saying that, but to say that all United's problems would be solved or whatever it was he said.
Don't forget, he doesn't have a great record in the transfer market with either Sunderland or Ipswich Town. So. And finally, it's a Keane old double dip.
Okay.
Roy Keane, I'm disgusted with players. They're going to war. They're hugging and kissing. Catherine sent that in. She was wondering, Keane, she goes, come on. What's your thoughts on the tunnel activities pre-game?
With United and Liverpool?
Yeah. No, it's changed somewhat. It has. I have seen a change. Like, Roy Keane, Gary Neville, Patrick Vieira staring ahead, Steven Gerrard staring ahead in their own thoughts, ready to go out. There was very little interaction. And now it's like,
there's part of me that kind of likes thinking that these guys really don't like each other.
Yeah, there is a real part of me that likes the going to battle, they don't like it. Arsenal versus Man United, early 2000s.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. I feel like we're kind of in a different age now where everyone's friends. They've got the same agents. They run in the same social circles. Like, so these guys are cool with one another, and it looks good on camera for them to be like hugging their cool buddy on the other team. But I don't know. I kind of enjoy that old school mentality.
Did you ever see the one at the Manchester Derby? So I think Keane was injured, and it was during the early 2000s. I think it might have been one of the last games at Main Road, and Schmeichel has joined Manchester City. A legendary Manchester United goalkeeper, and Gary Neville is captain, and he's at the front of the tunnel, and he's just staring intently ahead. And Schmeichel is going down the line like, hey guys, how you doing? Hey, good to see you. You know, like Mr. Party Man, you know? And he gets to the front and he taps Neville on the shoulder to like shake hands, hey, how's it going? And Neville just sees him and he gives him the most dismissive pat off and returns to his 1,000-yard stare. I think the fact that there's foreigners in the league with the same agents makes such a difference. It really does.
Yeah, like, that could be.
It's a cultural thing.
That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like the intensity pre-match. If you want to like hug after a game, mutual respect, hard fuck game, I'm kind of cool with that. But before the game, I sort of like just like intense focus.
Yeah.
I hate my opponent. And I'm going to destroy him.
Yes, I like that too.
That is it for the mailbag. CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com, @COSoccerPod on Twitter, CaughtOffsideESPN on Instagram. It's really easy for people that we have different usernames for all three outlets. JJ, before we continue, I want to tell you about something. I want to tell you that when you need red wine at 4 p.m. or sushi at 9 p.m., a breakfast burrito at 8 a.m., ibuprofen at 10 a.m., what do? You Postmate it. Postmates is your personal food delivery, grocery delivery, whatever kind of delivery service all year round. Anything you're craving, Postmates can deliver. They're the largest on-demand network in the U.S. and offer delivery from all the restaurants, grocery and convenience stores, and traditional retailers you could possibly want or need. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, Postmates will bring you what you need within the hour. That's unbelievable. No more trips to the store. You don't even have to know where the store is. Postmates will deliver anything to you. Download the app for your iOS or Android for free. Browse local restaurants and businesses and track your delivery in real time. Here you go, JJ. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100, $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code OFFSIDE. That's code OFFSIDE for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. So that's like your groceries, a couple dinners, like for a week, just paid for by Postmates and, quite frankly, by us. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Download Postmates and save with code OFFSIDE, OFFSIDE. What to watch for? MLS postseason. Tonight, the games, if you are unaware, how dare you? Thursday, 8 o'clock p.m., Atlanta United FC and the Philadelphia Union.
Alex Beltran, he is a listener. He wants to know, is Andrew nervous about tonight against Atlanta, or does he feel they're playing with house money considering their opponent?
House money? No, certainly
not. House money's gone now after you won the first round, right?
Like, you're so, like, the Union are a good team. I almost feel like that's, I'm sure he didn't mean it this way.
No, he didn't mean it, though.
But it almost feels demeaning.
All right, calm down, Sally.
No, this is not house money. They are dangerously close to having a home playoff game in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
They're right there.
Atlanta without Michael Parkhurst. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for him. I know he finally got his MLS Cup last season, but I would have loved him to be, you know, further involved in this team because he's retiring. Well, he's pretty much retired now. He dislocated his shoulder, and that's it. Like, Atlanta are going to go on, and I feel really bad for him.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's see. Also, the late night game, JJ, this is the one. This is the one that everybody has been waiting for. They saved the best for last. 10:30, LAFC and the LA Galaxy.
El Tráfico.
Yep. I don't know if this is any kind of barometer as to, like, the interest in this game, but according to SeatGeek, the league's official ticketing partner, as of Wednesday evening, the lowest priced ticket was just under $160, with the highest one listed at just over $750. The average resale price for the game was $307.
That's probably unheard of for MLS.
Yeah.
Not probably, is unheard of. That is crazy.
For a not conference semifinal.
Yeah, but come on. This has been, for the past two seasons, the most enjoyable, interesting game in MLS. There's just no question.
What a night. It makes me really... I'm sorry for our Atlanta listeners, but if the Union win and I'm feeling good and I can just then sit back as the nightcap and watch that game, like, that's what a great night right there. Yeah, I don't know what to
think. You with a smug glass of wine if the Union win. Could you imagine? Oh, beaming.
This El Tráfico, I don't know what to think. Every part of my being knows and believes that LAFC are the better team. But there's just something about this matchup that they've never won.
Remember the last game where after 2 minutes, LAFC concede? Like, Bob Bradley... I just think LA Galaxy have their number. We see that in sports regularly. There's just some team who have voodoo over you and Zlatan over you. And I just don't feel confident for LAFC.
Wow, that's a statement. So you're prepared to say something right now. I'm picking LAFC to win this 1-2-1.
Galaxy 3-2.
Can you imagine?
There will be goals.
Poor Bob Bradley.
Hey, Messi, yeah, we got Messi. Come on, Messi.
No, f*** Messi. You know Messi?
Can't lose this one. Let's see, JJ, we've got EPL What to Watch For in a sec, but first I want to tell you something else. That's right, your mid What to Watch For update, that growing a business is hard.
Oh.
Especially when you're wasting hours every day moving data from emails to spreadsheets to your CRM to wherever.
That's for sure.
Shouldn't that kind of stuff just happen without you lifting a finger? Well, Zapier can help. Zapier is the easiest way to automate your work. It connects connects all your business software and handles work for you so you can focus on the things that matter most. No more wasting your time on tasks that you know could be automated, because that's exactly what Zapier was built to do. Just go to our special link, zapier.com/offside. By the way, I should tell you that Zapier is spelled Zapier.com/offside. Connect the apps you use most and let Zapier take it from there. Zapier lets you instantly engage with leads, send them to a CRM or spreadsheet, then notify your team so they can act fast on every opportunity. These are words, by the way, because I'm not like a person. Like, what we do for a living is just, look at us with microphones. Like, this is, I'm sure there are smart people out there that know what a CRM is.
Look at us with microphones, yeah, or whatever.
We're halfwits.
What kind of a sentence is that?
Because we're brainless halfwits that just have mics in front of us. I don't know what a CRM is. Do you?
No.
All right.
Consolidated Regulatory Mortgage.
That's probably it. You're smart. Zapier lets you instantly engage with leads, send them to a CRM or spreadsheet, then notify your team so they can act fast on every opportunity. And that's just scratching the surface. Zapier supports more than 1,500 business applications, so the possibilities are virtually endless. Best of all, it's easy to build the exact solution you need in minutes without writing code or asking a developer for help. Join more than 4.5 million people who are saving an average of 40 hours per month by using Zapier. So here's what you do. Right now, through November, try Zapier for free by going to our special link, zapier.com/offside. That's zapier.com/offside for your free 14-day trial, zapier.com/offside. EPL What to Watch For, JJ, Saturday, 12:30, Burnley and Chelsea.
What was that?
That's my Birmingham accent. Burnley. Chelsea.
Really?
Peaky Blinders is back, and I feel...
Hello, Michael.
I feel that I need to perfect a Birmingham accent if I'm going to really watch that show and
Andrew
talk about
Gundling
it.
Has come down here and tried to tell the Peaky Blinders what to do.
Somebody made a really nice logo for us off of the Peaky Blinders logo.
Matt Sears.
I think we'll have to put that up on Twitter as our new kind of background.
Oh, I put it up as Twitter, on Twitter, but I'll put it as the background.
Yeah, make it the background, because I actually have another one from a couple years ago, JJ, on my computer from when we first started talking about Peaky Blinders. Somebody sent us a picture with our heads superimposed on, like, Peaky Blinder bodies.
That was Matt Sears as well.
That was him too?
I actually think Matt Sears was the first person to download our podcast and listen to it way back when.
And he's still with us.
Yeah, he is. By the way, he sent me a graphic, very nice graphic.
That leads us into Sunday at 12:30. When we last left you with the caught offside cup, a Champions League final had happened. A horrifying handball was ruled against the heroic Tottenham Hotspur.
Oh my God.
And the evil Liverpool were allowed to prevail.
Let's look at it. This is match 15 in our series. Unbelievable. Andrew Gundling has one win. JJ Devaney has 8. 5 draws Yeah.
Yeah. It's been very one-sided. We said after the Champions League final that it almost feels like none of this even matters anymore. How can anything ever top that happening?
But boy, could you do with a win.
Yeah. You know, it's sad because I don't feel like I've learned the lessons of the past to know that what happened, that 5-0 win for Tottenham over Red Star Belgrade in the Champions League midweek means absolutely zero when it comes to what's going to happen over the weekend.
Yeah. I think it'll be a 1-1 draw going into the last minute and Gazzaniga will suddenly realize that he left the burner on in his house. He'll sprint from the goal and the ball will trickle across the line. 2-1 Liverpool. Also, there is a 30 for 30 that Matt designed.
Chasing JJ. Boy, that Matt's got a lot of time to make fun of me, doesn't he?
Yep. He's going on the list, isn't he?
Actually, those logos are pretty cool.
Yep.
Good work by him. Yeah, caught offside cup Sunday, 12:30 p.m. on at the same time as Arsenal and Crystal Palace.
Which is a bit weird.
You don't usually see the multiple Sunday at 12:30 games.
It's a bit odd.
And JJ, I take that Arsenal Crystal Palace game and I use that right into my
red card.
Yeah, my red card is the Mesut Ozil situation at Arsenal. Now, he once again did not feature in Arsenal's 1-0 defeat to Sheffield United on Monday. He's made just one start this season. He's been left out of Unai Emery's last four matchday squads. So where is he? Why is he not even getting a look during a time when it looks like the Gunners could really use some kind of help in creativity or an attack? The BBC asked Unai Emery if Ozil was available, and his answer didn't really make much sense.
Well, it began by saying good evening, which he always does. Good evening.
They asked if he was available, and Emery said, he can help us, yes. I suppose that's an answer.
I mean.
Now, I know that Ozil is no one's favorite. I know you hate the wages that he is on. I know that he has a face that, for whatever reason, fans seem to just generally be annoyed with. But he can play. Since coming to Arsenal, he's created 522 chances. The next closest in that time is Aaron Ramsey with just 272. Now, I'm reading here again from the BBC. Against Sheffield United, the influence of the midfield five of Nicolas Pepe, Granit Xhaka, Joe Willock, Matteo Guendouzi, and Bukayo Saka paled in comparison to the Blades. They managed two key passes between them compared to five for the Sheffield United midfield. Look, if things were humming along nicely, I wouldn't think twice about it. But did you just hear that? The Sheffield United midfield was far better than Arsenal's. So things are not humming along nicely. So just try it. Just try it. What do you got?
This red card is more about a situation that is developing since Monday and the release of a report. This is from The Guardian. Former professional footballers are 3.5 times more likely to suffer from dementia and other serious neurological diseases, a landmark study has found, confirming a long-suspected link between the sport and brain damage. A 22-month research project by the University of Glasgow's Brain Injury Group also discovered there was a 5-fold increase in the risk of Alzheimer's, a 4-fold increase in motor neuron disease, and a 2-fold increase in Parkinson's. The report was unable to establish whether the cause of the higher levels of brain disease was due to repeated concussions, heading leather footballs, or some other factor. However, the Football Association, which helped fund the research, said it would be setting up a task force to examine the potential causes more deeply. The FA confirmed that despite the study, which used recently digitised NHS Scotland data to compare the causes of death of 7,676 former male professional players who were born between 1900 and 1976 against those of more than 23,000 people from the general population, there was not yet enough evidence to change any aspect of the game. Our research shows the number of aerial challenges has already been reduced significantly over the years as we have changed to smaller pitches and possession-based football, the FA chief exec Mark Bullingham said. However, as new evidence comes to light, we will continue to monitor and reassess all aspects of the game. This is kind of the first time we've really just said there is a link between the industry of football and the things that are done on the football field.
This is going to change the game.
It really is.
I mean,
it's not small, imperceptible percentages. This is a fourfold increase in motor neuron disease and a twofold increase in Parkinson's, a fivefold increase in Alzheimer's. Subconcussive blows to the head from a football are clearly causing damage to professional footballers who do this as an industry, as a job.
Yeah.
And it's going to change the game. And I kind of feel as if you go with science on this and you have to adapt and that, you know.
So what's the move? Because if heading a football is just too ingrained in the game for me to say, that's it, it's illegal now, take it out. I feel like you have to try steps before you go to that, whether that be wearing some sort of like Petr Cech-esque helmet. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we need to research into whether that will make a significant difference, that we can have a helmet. I mean, you need a helmet that is A, safe to wear, B, that when you head the ball will still do the same things as if it was hitting your naked forehead. Opta have these statistics saying that high crosses in the Premier League have declined from a peak since Opta records began in 2006 of 38.2 per game to a low of 24.2 last season. But can we just really say, hey, don't do anything because we know how football works in cycles. Mm. Crossing and heading might come back in. Maybe you're only allowed head the ball. I mean, in both penalty areas, that wouldn't make a difference. That's where most headers happen anyway.
I don't know.
But it's going to change the game and it's worth kind of steeling ourselves and maybe actually, you know, realizing that if it does change the game, it's for the greater good and health of people.
Yeah.
Caught Offside's man of the match.
JJ, my man of the match is actually the couple of the match. Alex Morgan and her husband, Servando Carrasco. JJ, the couple announced yesterday that they're expecting a baby girl. How about that?
That's nice.
They posted a picture on Instagram on a beach with a sign saying, baby girl, April 2020. And the caption, we are already in love and we haven't even met her yet. Newest member of the Carrasco family coming soon. In terms of what this means for Alex Morgan, the soccer player, a source close to her has said that she does want to play in the 2020 Olympics. Now, with that, I would say it's unrealistic to believe that she'll be able to take part in qualifying or the early part of next year's NWSL season. The Olympics, by the way, begin on July 22nd in Japan.
So there's if I'm doing my maths here, there's a good chance she won't have kicked a competitive ball before camp.
Right. That's probably true. And you know what it's time for now? It's time now for the cheesy local news anchor portion of the show. JJ, with two parents who are soccer players, I'm sure they'll have no problem feeling her kick during the pregnancy. JJ, news today that Alex Morgan is expecting a baby girl. No word as to whether or not the doctor will be allowed to use their hands during the delivery. one more here. JJ, we end with happy news tonight that Alex Morgan and Servando Carrasco are expecting a baby girl. No word as to what position she might play, although Alex was already overheard saying, she's a keeper. You know what? One more, JJ. Let's see. JJ, happy news from the world of football, better known as soccer here in the States, as Alex Morgan has announced she'll be having a baby girl, although VAR is still determining whether or not it will be twins. Now here's Storm Johnson with the weather. Storm?
Oh, that's nice. That's really nice stuff. When we return with the evening nightly news from Caught Offside, guacamole, can it cure baldness? And we'll have Chip Patterson with the weather.
What do you have?
Jeez. By the way, are you just going to read out happy things that are happening in other people's lives that have nothing to do with football?
Alex Morgan is having a baby. I thought that was relevant for this portion of the show.
Tangential. I expected better. Man of the match.
You have a black heart.
Yeah, we know this.
Oh.
Dries Mertens, 116 goals for Napoli, surpassing Maradona's record yesterday, equaling and surpassing during the game. Marek Hamsik leads the way for Napoli with 121 in all competitions across about 12 years. Mertens' goals are across 6 years since 2013 with the club. Maradona had about 7 years for his 115. Really, I mean, this is elite company in terms of Napoli lore that Dries Mertens has entered. Cavani, Andrew, he sits on 104 goals for the club. He scored 104 across 3 seasons in all competitions. Here's Dries Mertens' second goal against Salzburg last night.
Now Malqui, played in again by Alan, and trying to pick out a spot again, and Mertens! Go are now on a two-goal night in Salzburg.
Lovely side foot volley by Mertens. And he's one of those guys. I know he's 31 now, but how has nobody come in for him? How has nobody come in for Insigne? You know, these players that Napoli have, they've done well to hold on to the core of what they've had for so long.
Yeah. Mertens too, I guess maybe a little more so, like, has had international success.
Yeah, he's been really good for Belgium. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'm glad they haven't broken up. It's nice to see players, you know, write their names into the...
No, you're right though. Like, without them being there, what would Serie A be right now? You know, like, you'd have this, just like, this machine atop, at least Napoli poses some threat.
Yeah, I guess Atalanta in the last two seasons have played nice football too. Yeah. AC Milan, kind of in decline. Conte bringing Inter back, I suppose. Yeah, but generally, if you want to watch Italian football and watch enjoyable Italian football, I'm about to annoy a lot of Italian Americans out here, you're going to watch Napoli, and that's it.
There you go. That's it for this podcast. This was a lot of fun. We've got big MLS action tonight. Should be a great time. I can't wait to just sit down, watch, hopefully enjoy. Certainly enjoy the second one. The first one will be one that you endure.
Do you want to give a score prediction?
Union 1-0. No, I'm sorry. Atlanta has to score a goal. I'm going to say Union 2-1. And my other one was LAFC 2-1.
Yeah. You're going to stick with those?
Yeah, caught offside cup, probably somewhere in the vicinity of Liverpool 7,018, Tottenham, I'll give them two. I think they'll be able to sneak a couple past.
Yeah, it could be interesting, though.
Yeah, seems like it.
Come on, you've just beaten Red Star Belgrade.
Hey, this was fun, man. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.